2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great. University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
What's up, Cougar Nation, and welcome into another edition of Cougar Sports Saturday. Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper. We'll be talking BYU sports all day long. 156 years ago, on June 19th, 1865, enslaved African Americans in Galveston, Texas, were first told they were freed. And we'll be talking about Juneteenth all throughout the program. And in hour number three, we've got a special edition Juneteenth commentary from players and coaches. You won't want to miss that coming up at 2:30. So we'll have you covered all day long. Me and Mitch were down at BYU Media Day earlier in the week, so we got stuff from Kalani Sitake today, Isaac Rex, James Empey. Going to be a jam-packed show, Mitch.
It really is. I'm excited about this, Matt. BYU Football Media Day was fantastic on Thursday. We'll have a lot to discuss from that, what we heard, what we saw, a lot to get to there. But first things first, though, we got to get a little bit of a therapy session there out there for our BYU and Jazz fans. We'll start things off in the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
The Utah Jazz blew a 25-point lead last night, Mitch, and they lost to the Clippers 4-2, and in Game 6 they lost 131-119. They gave up 81 points in that second half, and we know that there's strong ties between BYU fans and Jazz fans, and normally we wouldn't dip into this pool, but to me, this just feels like an enormously missed opportunity by the Jazz. No Kawhi Leonard in Game 5 and 6. You can't win either of those games. There's injuries on the Eastern Conference. We don't know what Chris Paul's availability is going to be in the Western Conference. It just seems like an unbelievable missed opportunity for the Jazz.
Yeah, it really is. And this was the year for where everything kind of opened up. You know, you wonder what could have been had Donovan Mitchell been healthy, had Mike Conley been fully healthy. But every other team was injured, too. I mean, you lost to a Clippers team there where Terrence Mann goes off for 39 points. I'm like, huh? Like, what? Terrence Mann from Florida State? He's the guy that won the game for the Clippers? Like, it's pretty crazy to think. And to think that this Jazz team, the number one seed, the best record in the league, doesn't get to the conference finals, it's a missed opportunity. And Jazz likely, I would imagine, will have coverage on KSLSports.com. Locker cleanout probably going to be taking place today. Exit interviews. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. It's going to be the first year with Ryan Smith overseeing an offseason. What type of approach will he take? Because if it was the old Miller regime, you'd just basically say they're going to run it back. Everything is coming back. But Ryan Smith seems like he might be a little more aggressive potentially. And obviously Ryan Smith, a diehard BYU fan, he had BYU associate AD Brian Santiago sitting next to him down in L.A. at the Staples Center last night. I saw that, thought that was kind of cool. And so it's going to be an interesting offseason for the Utah Jazz, but definitely a missed opportunity. And Jazz fans and BYU fans out there, this is a safe space. You can share your thoughts with us from last night's game on the UCCU KSL text line 57500. But we also ask on our poll of the day today, which you can also text us your thoughts. It got us thinking, Matt, and maybe, you know, we know that you love to dive into these horrific BYU losses. So this is kind of like in your wheelhouse. What collapse in BYU sports history is the equivalent of the Jazz blowing a 25-point lead against the Clippers last night? Here are the options. BYU versus Ole Miss in the Big Dance back in 2015. That was bad. The Hawaii football game in 2001. Remember, BYU was undefeated that season. You could go with other, or what's currently leading, BYU versus Utah 2018. That is running away with things right now. It's 70% of the vote, and I have a feeling Cougar Nation's going to side with that one.
I voted for other, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you pick?
I picked a different BYU versus Utah loss. Now,
okay.
I know that BYU blew a huge lead in 2018, but that was the circumstances around that game were bizarre. There was a lot of injuries. It was at the end of the year. Utah was getting ready to play in the Pac-12 championship game. So were they looking past it? To me, I factored all that in. For me, it's 2016. I know that BYU didn't blow a huge lead.
Okay.
But when you force, what was it, five or six turnovers?
Six. Yeah.
When you force six turnovers and barely lead, and then you have to mount a two-minute drive to even tie the football game. I just feel like in any scenario, if you say you're playing your rival, it's early in the year, both teams are at full strength, you've got a chance to snap the streak, if you're going to force six turnovers, are you going to win that football game? You would say yes 100 times out of 100, and you'd say we win by double-digit points. And never at no point in that football game were they in control. I remember early in that game, I think Troy Williams threw an interception or fumbled it, and BYU went backwards, and they had to settle for a field. Like, they were in scoring position when they got the football. No, it was Joe Williams' fumble, excuse me. And they go backwards, and they have to settle for a field. That one still haunts me, because when you watch it, you're like, everything is going BYU's way after that pick six. After that, everything went BYU's way. They have Taysom Hill scampers down the sideline, big touchdowns. And I never felt like they were going to win that football game, even though you forced six turnovers. So for me, it's like, that's that one. 2018 is a great answer, don't get me wrong, but that 2016 one, I just feel like, man, because we talk so often, BYU's got to win the turnover battle. Well, they win the turnover battle and they lose the football game.
Yeah, it's funny when you think about it that way, but I mean, yeah, Jake Oldry that game, I remember they resorted to him so many times, and he was awesome, but they were settling for field goals, they weren't capitalizing. That is a good pick, but I side with the masses here, 2018, just because you're up 20-0, and then Utah has that pick six, and you're like, uh-oh, here comes the meltdown. But then they answered.
27-7.
Yeah, then it goes 27-7, but then Matt Hadley gets hurt at running back, who was
huge
out of nowhere, just like this stud running back for BYU, picking up the tough yardage. Then Isaiah Kafusi got hurt in that game. It was just a collapse, and you're thinking, when is it going to end for BYU? Like Jason Shelley. Like, think about that. The quarterbacks that have beaten BYU in this stretch.
Disgusting.
You go John Hayes, Jason Shelley, you're like, what? Like, why can't anything break BYU's way? Like, BYU had Taysom Hill in 2016. They had Zach Wilson in 2018.
They have two NFL starting caliber quarterbacks.
And they lost to Troy Williams and Jason Shelley. Are you kidding me? Like, that just adds more salt to the wound when you think about it that way. But the BYU Ole Miss in 2015 basketball was
that
pretty good. But I got to go with BYU Utah 2018. Because imagine if BYU gets that game. Like, just everything kind of resets. Like, you just got to get one.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing for BYU at this point. That's why the 2021 game is going to be magnified. And we got some commentary about the rivalry game at Media Day. We'll share some thoughts on that, what we heard from players and coaches. But you just got to get one eventually, because then I feel like it just takes this big, boulder off your shoulders and just kind of move on. And everything can be all reset, and BYU can kind of just play loose in the rivalry. It feels like, as the years go by and this losing streak continues to mount, pile up, there's just more and more pressure on BYU to try to win a game. And they maybe tend to overthink it a little bit, whereas Utah just continues to pile up the victories. And they're going to be looking for their 10th straight victory this September. If BYU doesn't win this fall, we'll be looking at, for BYU, up to a 15-year drought, because the next time the two teams play is 2024. So, Yeah, 2016, 2018, those were some definitely difficult losses for BYU.
Of course, we're putting this into perspective as we just kind of open up the texts, the tweets about the Jazz blowing a 2-0 lead and more importantly, blowing a 25-point lead early in the third quarter.
Yeah, and speaking of the Jazz, too, I saw a crazy stat. They're one of only three teams that have blown two-game leads in back-to-back years. The others, the Clippers in 2015 and 16, and the Phoenix Suns in 94 and 95. So,
and I believe it's the largest blown lead in an elimination game as
yeah,
well.
That's so right.
In the history, think about that. In the history of the NBA, that's the largest blown lead. And
they lost by double digits, too.
I was just going to say, they lost by 12. So it was a 37-point swing. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. The fact that the Jazz darn near blew the 25-point lead in one quarter, too, in the third quarter. It was just a insane collapse, and it's going to have a lot of questions. I know Jazz fans, because we see a lot of Jazz Twitter with BYU fans, because there's a huge overlap. You know, a lot of BYU fans love the Jazz here locally, and I think some people are pointing towards Rudy Gobert as the blame. I look more at Quinn Snyder for the blame, because I thought he got completely outcoached by a guy like Ty Lue, who I thought in the first series, in the first round against the Mavs, I thought the Mavs were the head and shoulders the better team, but hey, Ty Lue, credit to him. When his team gets a lead in a series, they close it out. He's 12-1 now in closeout games. Big credit to LeBron James, but Ty Lue, pretty dang good as a coach, I guess, when it comes to getting those closeout wins. Had that 3-1 comeback with the Golden State against the Golden State Warriors a few years back. So that was a frustrating collapse by the Utah Jazz, because it just felt like once Kawhi went down, they're in the finals. Yep. And Chris Paul's in COVID protocol, like the path was cleared for the Jazz to get back to the NBA Finals, and now we're talking about them having locker cleanout. Pretty insane. Like, usually locker cleanout used to have a kitty corner. They go to Crown Burger and pick up the burgers at Crown Burger. They're not doing that anymore. I don't know where they get their food takeout anymore on locker cleanout day, but very early exit for the Jazz. Very surprising, to be honest with you.
I'm probably with you about the Quinn blame. It's hard because you look at the end of that bench and you're like, maybe there was nowhere to go because Niang was no good in this series.
Why didn't Clarkson play? Like, the guy was on fire, and then he's just MIA in the second half. Like, where's he at? What's going on here?
Yeah, here's why I blame Rudy. Two things. Number one, you've got to be an offensive threat. When teams go small, you have to be able to neutralize, because you can't expect Rudy to defend the three. That's not what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to defend the rim, and they're bringing him out. So his rim protection, I didn't think was very good. But I'm not going to blame him for that, because he was brought out to the three-point line. But you got to be able to punish them on the other end. When Batum is guarding you, when Morris is guarding you, that's got to be an automatic 2 points. Or very worst, score a couple times, so then they think about double-teaming you, and then you kick it out to the shooters. That never happened. And then the other thing that I think was difficult to watch, not a good enough rebounder. When you're that big and you're playing against a small team, if they miss the shot, it should be one and done. And that just was not the case for Utah, and I think a lot of that falls on Rudy.
You can text us 57500 at the UCCU KSL text line. What would you say is BYU's equivalent to the biggest collapse in BYU sports history compared to the Jazz 25-point collapse last night in L.A.? We'll talk about that more. But also, BYU Media Day news and notes coming up next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. It's 12:20 p.m. on this Saturday, June 19th. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte with you. And 2 days ago, we were down in Provo at BYU Football Media Day. And I got to say, Matt, it felt so good to be back in person, look people face-to-face. I loved it, because you got to go back to March 12th, the first day after everything pretty much shut down. You had a Zoom call with Mark Pope the moment that the NCAA tournament was canceled. And ever since March 12th, it's all been Zoom calls. So for those out there listening that maybe don't know the media protocols, that's what we've been doing pretty much the past 15 months. And better than nothing. Like, I'm very appreciative of BYU having those Zoom calls, because they could have easily said, you know what, we're just shutting it down completely. But just having that interaction face-to-face, it was great, because you just – It's a different level of conversation, too. Like, there's just more personality, and it's more fun. It was just great, and it felt like, in that moment, like, life was kind of back to normal, and that felt good.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fun to have, as you mentioned, The interviews are great, and we're going to have you covered for the rest of summer. I mean, we went.
Yes.
We have some great interviews for you starting next segment. We got Kalani Sitake. We've got tons of coaches and players. But that conversation beforehand, you don't get. You know, Aaron Roderick telling us a story about losing a tire on the freeway.
Yeah.
You don't
get scary stuff, too.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm driving to work, and my tire blows out, and I have to cross like seven lanes of traffic. You know, you don't get that kind of stuff. Being able to talk to Jaren Hall about getting ready to have his first kid and what that means for him and his family. You don't have that opportunity to get to know people, and you know, huge credit to Brett Pine and Duff Tittle and all of BYU, John McBride, for putting that together, because that was a risk, by the way. This is one of the first opportunities where we've had been able to do that in a sports function, and so it felt so good, and we have a lot of great stuff for you.
We do, and you know, there was a lot of talking points at storylines that I thought emerged at BYU Football Media Day. Nothing groundbreaking. Like, it wasn't anything program altering, like scheduling announcements or conference realignment. But one big thing that maybe you could say was program altering, it doesn't really fire up the fan base, I think. But for people inside the program, the players, it's a big deal if they want to kick the tires and look at that avenue, and that's the Built for Life program. Kalani Sitake and Tom Holmo created this for all student athletes, and it really coincides with name, image, likeness, one, but that's a small piece of it. Players now also have the opportunity to start nonprofits, nonprofits, and they can start organizations that and charities that help out their communities and things that mean a lot to them, and it's all funneled through this Built for Life program, that which is tied in with the Silicon Slopes and the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce. It's a really cool deal, and when the day comes when the NCAA eventually allows student athletes to make money off their name, image, likeness, BYU now is going to have a system in place where players are going to be able to look at those avenues and find ways to make money. So it's a really cool deal for BYU players. It's not, I think, anything big for fans. Like, I don't think it really gets them excited, but it's definitely big for the players and the coaches.
I love what athletic director Tom Holmo said in the State of the Program. He said there's too many kids across the country that get used up in football. And that's not going to happen to BYU when talking about the Built for Life program. And what I think is so interesting is, look, I have been someone for the entirety of my 2+ years on the show who have said that athletes should be able to make money off their name. It just makes total sense to me, and I'm glad that we're moving that direction. I think one of the more underrated parts of Built for Life, as I understand it, because the word we heard a lot with it is its flexibility, meaning it can transform to be what it needs to be based on what the rules are determined to be by the NCAA. But I love the fact that there's going to be education about life after football.
Sure.
Because even when I went to college, Mitch, there wasn't enough education about work, how to work, like how to... What's the proper etiquette for sending emails? I know that sounds crazy, but that was never taught to me. You know, that's been learned on the job, like balancing a budget, like finances, managing your time, internships, all that kind of stuff. Like, you had to be proactive in college to do that. And for those who did, and they went on to succeed. And for the ones that did not go on to play professional football, because Kalani Sitake, he mentioned this, Mitch, where it's like all these kids want to play in the NFL. They're just not going to. Like, that's the reality. How do we prepare them for life after football? This is going to do that. So I think that's really exciting for all student athletes, where they're going to walk into a job day one and they're going to be much further ahead than they were right now.
Yeah, BYU has made a huge focus this offseason on the player experience. And Billy Nixon, the equipment manager, but also player experience director, they've even had all the players update their LinkedIn profile photos.
That's a big deal.
Connect with individuals in the Silicon Slopes. That does matter. It's a big deal. And I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to be groundbreaking per se for opening up new recruiting paths. But if something like name, image, likeness is a big deal to a potential recruit, BYU is in a position where they've got the resources and the tools to offer the best of the best to these potential student athletes. But by no means is this suddenly going to be, oh, BYU's now going to be getting 4- and 5-star recruits. No. Like, it's BYU's still going to get their guys. I mean, you hope that the on-field product then elevates the caliber of the recruits. If you can consistently have those 9, 10, 11 win seasons and get more guys to the league, that's going to get you more doors open with the 4-star recruits. But I think that what's also notable with BYU's program, and I came away with this from talking to some of the players and the coaches, is that Kalani Sitake is clearly secure right now in his role as the head football coach. You don't have the leash and the luxury to be able to spend the time to carve out this name, image, likeness program if you're having struggles on the field. When you come off an 11-1 season, you produce five guys in the NFL, and also you're not having a mass exodus to the transfer portal. You have guys that want to stay part of the BYU experience. Kalani Sitake has the support of the administration, and they see his vision for what he wants for BYU football, and I think it's created a situation where we're seeing more support given to BYU sports than I think I've ever seen in my lifetime. And I think that's a great thing as BYU continues to grow and tries to achieve more as an independent going forward in this unique landscape of college sports.
I'm glad you bring that up, because I felt the same way. Just an immense comfort from the coaching staff. And I love the role that Kalani's playing now, because before, I feel like he was more involved with the X's and O's and with the game. And he still is. I'm not saying he's not. But he's taking more, he's becoming more of a Lavelle Edwards, where you're kind of the CEO. You're overseeing the program. And I think that's a great place to be, because a lot of these programs that are great, and by no means am I comparing BYU to an Alabama or a Clemson, but those coaches oversee the program.
Yep.
They're not plugging holes with coordinators and position coaches and game plans. They're able to focus on creating a culture and a vision, which there's no doubt that Kalani Sitake has, and now you can kind of manage from afar. And what a luxury it is for BYU too to have an experienced coaching staff, because this hasn't always been the case with Kalani Sitake. Guys that have been there multiple years know what BYU is about, and then you bring in some experienced guys like Kevin Kloon and Daryl Funk. We had a chance to catch up with Coach Kloon, and we'll play that later in the summer, where he said, "I never thought I'd be here because I coached against BYU for so often, but I'm surprised at how much I enjoy working here. It's been a blast to work with these coaches and with these players." So there's just a great camaraderie, a great culture going on at BYU right now, which I think will help foster more winning seasons.
And you'll hear from the man that's creating that culture, Kalani Sitake, coming up next. We got news, traffic, and weather, and then we got to take this break, and then you'll hear from Kalani Sitake, the head football coach of the BYU program, coming up next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.